Julia, and she's going to tell us a bit about West Quarter in Exeter.
So yes, that's a bit about some of the residents there.
Yeah.
What's some of the jobs that the girls would do for money?
What the girls would do, it was a time when the most likely occupation was that they were going to cleaning. So yes, boys mostly started as errand boys. Not the apprentice printers were special, but boys mostly started as errand boys and then became porters, and girls went into domestic service or laundry. But they would also be working in things like mending sacks. And the breweries, there were a lot of breweries, made jobs for both the boys and the girls. And there were mending lace. I think the most unusual job that I've seen a West Quarter girl have was to work as an attendant at the museum. And I kind of wonder how she managed to get that job, because it must have been quite a peaceful and, rather different job from that for her contemporaries, who might be making brushes in a brush factory.
Do we know a number of how many people were living in
In the whole quarter, there were about 3,000 people lived there, and it was the most crowded quarter of Exeter, if you look at the statistics. And one of the things that overcrowding did, of course, was to expose people to infectious diseases. So if you got something like a flu epidemic, it would rush round the West Quarter because everybody was living on top of one another. There were six people
packed and crammed.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a sad case I was reading about yesterday of this. You have to kind of remember that after the First World War, there were a lot of the men who came back who'd been injured in the war and got long-term health problems. So I was reading about a family in one of the 19th century flats where they had two rooms, and there were the father, who'd come back from the war with chronic emphysema, so that's a lung infection, the mother, there were five children just in the two rooms, and the eldest girl then developed tuberculosis. And tuberculosis was a very frightening disease in those days because there was no treatment for it. They hadn't invented antibiotics, so all these infectious diseases, really there was nothing that could be done except rest, hot liquid, and try and look after yourself. But when you're all living on top of one another, so you'd have the father who's unable to work anymore, kind of chronically coughing in one corner, and Dorothy, the girl, coughing away with tuberculosis in another, and the rest of the family juggling around between the two rooms.
Mm-hmm. What does the tuberculosis do to a person?
So it eats away at your lungs. These are all sort of respiratory diseases. So gradually that affects your ability to keep your system going because you can't breathe properly. So I think her death certificate says it's from tuberculosis and cardiac failure. So it puts so much strain on your system that eventually the heart gives up and can't function any longer.
Who were the most popular merchants?
So, I would say that's a really difficult thing to answer. I know who they would have said the most popular merchant was, and that was the butcher on the top of the South Street and Guinea Street corner, Mr. Stillman. And the reason he was so popular was because many people in the West Quarter didn't have much money. And what he would do is on Saturday night, he'd say, right, everything in the shop has got to go. And so that people would be queuing up for the cheap meat so that they could have a Sunday dinner or make a suet pudding or something like that with some of the meat. So I think he was very popular indeed. and it was the same in the market, because the market was a proper fruit and veg market. And so Saturday night was always the time when they were clearing out all they wanted, and everybody rushed up there to get the bargains and get something to help them eat over the next few days. So yes, I think food would definitely be the kind of merchants everybody enjoyed, like the bakers as well.
What was the most unique thing about the 1920s in Exeter?
I think that I would have to say it's probably the shadow of the First World War, because I'm just astonished when I read about the individual families, just how many of the men had fought and come back with disabilities. So whether they were physical ones, like the emphysema, or they lost an arm or lost a leg, and you'd see them trying to earn a living in the streets by selling matches. There was always something going on to raise funds for the war memorials, for example. There were children who'd been orphaned in the First World War. So I would say it's that, on one side, that's what I call the shadow side. It's the First World War and its impact. And, of course, not just the physical illnesses, but also post-traumatic stress disorder. You get lots of accounts of people who can be set off and lose their temper at the slightest thing, and they say, oh, well, it's the war. But then, on the other side, I think it's a time of fun. So the cinema, big, really big, starting to take off, and they were that was the cheapest form of entertainment, much cheaper than going to the music hall or the theatre. And it was nice and it was warm and comfortable, which houses weren't. And it had electric light, which most houses didn't. And so that was a really nice thing to go out to do, to have a time out at the cinema. And there were also sort of fun, I mean, the motorbike was fun, the sort of arrival of the car, and not that many people in the West Quarter could afford cars, but they could go on a charabang outing up to down to the seaside or up to Dartmoor. So the progressive side of the 1920s is important too. And there's a kind of American influence as well, so you start to get jazz music in and different sorts of swing music. People dance to Charleston. And also colour in clothes. And I had a discussion with a friend of mine who's been researching 100 years ago in the country. And she's got the pictures of the school photos of the children there, and they're all in the kind of sombre, but the girls are in the black dress and white pinafore that their Victorian ancestors would have worn. But in the West Quarter, that's not the case. We've got a picture of the Farthing Breakfast itself, painted by somebody who remembers it, which is in the Royal Albert Memorial Museum. It's not actually there, it's in their store. But it shows that the young people around the tables waiting for their cocoa and buns were actually dressed in red and blue and yellow. So new fabrics were coming in, like rayon, which could be dyed colour. So it's a much more colourful place than it had been before the war.
And if you could pick one thing, what impacted Exeter the most that has been carried out to today?
What sort of like the legacy of the 1920s?
Like what event? Like, was there something that happened then that is, like, still going on today?
I think the kind of street carnivals were happening then. So there was a big fundraising carnivals. So, like, the big one that came up from St Thomas. Mostly then they were raising money for the hospitals. But I think it's quite a tradition. And it started to be there were students at the university college it was then, and they have rags and so on. So I'd say it's something of that vibrancy that's carried on into modern day processions, fetes, street theatre, all those sort of things. That might have been happening a bit beforehand, but the 1920s certainly got more people involved in it.
What job do you think you would have been best at if you were living back in the 1920s?
Well, I'd have loved to have that job at the museum. I don't think I'd have been any good at sewing or laundry. I think I might have got into the white collar world of doing the accounts at a firm, something like that, which they did have girls doing, not so many as the boys. Maybe the boys would be bookkeepers, clerks. I think what I wouldn't have liked to do was to be a pawnbroker. Pawnbrokers were big in the 1920s because everybody didn't have very much money. So it used to be a case of, you know, you got the suit of the father of the family out on a Friday so as he could wear it to the pub on a Saturday. And then when he'd gone back to work on a Monday, you took it back up to the pawnbrokers to get another 3 and 6 off it. But I think that there must have been quite a few arguments about, this is a lovely item and I would like to have 2 shillings and 6p. Oh, no, that's rubbish. You can only have 1 and 9. So yes, I think there were some good jobs and some not so good jobs, definitely.
What would be like the average salary for like working back then?
Well, at the sort of lower end of the scale, you might have got, I'll have to tell you it in old money, £2.10 per week, which is £2.50. But of course, with inflation, it doesn't really give you much of a feel for what you could buy for that.
What is the oldest building in West Quarters?
So the oldest building 100 years ago was probably the one called the Norman House, which was bombed. And I think there's an archaeological argument about whether or not it truly was a house dating from the Norman times. I mean, the pictures of it show it looks a kind of Norman style, with having kind of rounded arches inside the rooms. But some people say that actually it was a put-together job, and they'd taken some of the stones from St Nicholas Priory and brought them down to Preston Street and built them into the house so that it looked older than it was. But in the 1920s, they believed it truly was a Norman house. And it was saved from the demolition by a very dedicated man with a great interest in ancient buildings who happened to live out in Bradninch, but he bought it for the city. And they didn't quite know what to do with it. I think they had enough difficulty thinking what to do with St Nicholas Priory, which they did open to the public. So the Norman House, they let a furniture manufacturer use it as a showroom. So you could go in into his shop, and then if they had special visitors come to London, they might have a party of Boy Scouts from Australia, they would be taken down the hill to see the Norman House. So yeah, that's the oldest building and one that I think a lot of people were quite proud of. Whereas the ones on Stepford Hill, I mean, we look at the bottom of Stepford Hill today and it's really quite a nice house. Restored, you can see the timber bent, but it was falling down and very dilapidated in the 1920s. And when they came to put in the slum clearance plan for the area, they decided first of all that they were going to knock that down. And I'm not surprised, because if you read the report, it's riddled with woodworm and things are falling apart, and there's holes in the ceiling and you can see through to the floor below and so on. But because the Society for the Protection of Ancient Buildings had just been set up, they produced a report about it, and it was actually spared demolition, whereas most of Stepford Hill, as you can see as you go up, it is actually more modern housing, and it was, the old housing was cleared away, even the bits that possibly could have been saved under a more modern regime. So it was a big argument. They had to call in the inspector from the ministry to get permission to demolish all the areas. Lots of the inhabitants put in a petition saying, no, you don't clear it, it's very nice. And there was even one chap who said, you know, I've lived here for 80 years and I haven't got tuberculosis, so it must be all right. So yes, part of the community of the West Quarter is people didn't want to move out. They enjoyed it, they liked staying there. Yeah.
What's your favourite thing about the West Quarter, and like what really amazes you about it?
What really amazes me about it is that everybody knew everybody else, really. I suppose it's a very connected community. I mean, you know, I think nowadays you may live in a street and not know your neighbours or the people opposite or people just down the road, but there it does seem to me that everybody did know everybody. I think probably there was a lot more happening outside the house than inside the house, so you would stand casually on the cheap street corner and chat, or because there was so little space inside the house, children had to go to play outside the house, and then they got into trouble because they kicked a football around and broke some windows and something. But I think it's that sense that there were people around and on the streets and talking most of the time, whereas now we're in our little boxes with our screens and our televisions and so on. That's a very different feel, and I like that sense of community. I mean, it did spill over into arguments and trouble between neighbours and so on. But generally speaking, the memories people have of it is that you could go around and, you know, people would always help you out. So it's that feel of it that I think that's slightly that warm feel of belonging somewhere that West Quarter was very good at.
What do you think would be the most popular instrument anybody played?
Well, I suppose at that time, it depends what you took up. The people in some of the little terraced houses would actually have had a piano or something in the house, but I think there were lots of brass instruments around for people playing at the clubs and so on. So, yeah, tubas, trumpets and so on, definitely. And then, of course, the banjo became a very popular instrument, so that's quite fun too.
Have you ever had a love for music, and if you have, what has been your favourite band?
I'm not very musical, I have to confess. I'm afraid that would be lost on me because I just haven't. I've got a tin ear. I don't listen to music.
What was the most popular sport back in Exeter?
I should 100 years ago, I should say, it's probably football. There was quite a bit of swimming. They were very keen on encouraging young people to swim. There was a swimming bath where schools took children. They used to go in the river and there was a swimming area there. But I would say it's the big time the Grecians have kind of got themselves sorted and they're getting professional. They've got good players. And they actually had leagues down at street level in the West Quarter, so you'd be the Mermaid Yard team or the King Street team or whatever it is. So, yeah, that was definitely turning into the most popular sport of all.
Children have toys, and, if so, what sort of toys would they playing with?
I think they were fairly classic toys because mostly they were sort of homemade. So there'd be things like dolls and things with balls, sports balls and so on. And they were just coming into the stage of making metal, mass-produced metal toys. So things like the transport revolution, which you can see on the roads in cars and motorbikes and so on, there were starting to be toys made of those too, but the classics, the teddy bear. During the First World War, there'd been an Exeter teddy bear that had been created because many of the teddy bears had been imported from Germany, and that supply just stopped when we were at war with Germany. So some enterprising women in Exeter got together to make an Exeter teddy. So yes, I think classic ones, but there were new ones coming in as new influences came along.
What kind of initially drew you to this era of Exeter's history?
I think it's because it's I don't know why is that the case. I've done some work with a group when we were doing the anniversary of the First World War, so it's a bit what happened next, because our project in the First World War was we looked at the hospitals for wounded soldiers, because Exeter was a big centre for that. And then, so you kind of wonder, what next? So that's the kind of why the 1920s. But why the West Quarter? I suppose because it doesn't really exist anymore. It's looking at something that's disappeared rather than something, I could have looked at the Polesler Bridge Estate, which was 1920s built and is 100 yards down the road from me, but there isn't, so it's there and you can see it. And the thing about the West Quarter is it's vanished and we'll never get it back, but what can we find out about what used to be there and who used to be there?
Would families go to the river for outings and go on boats for outings?
It depends how much money you'd got. But there's quite a lot of accounts of people just in rowing boats, and there was a boatyard, in fact there were two boatyards, I think, Dorothy's and there was another one. So you could hire a boat and go on the river, but that's probably if you had an income larger than most West Quarter families did. So, but there's lots of accounts of people walking along the river is going down to the double lock. So, and there are some very, very sad stories about children who die by falling into the river. So there's an absolutely tragic one about where a three-year-old boy is summoned to the inquest about the little girl who's died by drowning. And he says, it just looked like Kathleen and I were playing with our tops, and she leant over too far and fell into the river, and she put her hand up, but I couldn't save her. And there were a lot of accidents that were happening there, and in fact there was a family of lifesavers who lived down on the quay, the Gregorys. They were very well known. Thomas Gregory actually ran a boatyard, and he was given the Royal Humane Society's Medal for Lifesaving for the number of bodies that he had pulled out of the river. And then he trained his son to do that as well, and his son got some of these medals. So it was a risky thing, the river. You had to be careful, and people weren't always as careful as they might have been, because it's quite tempting to, in the little leets, to go and pick the blackberries or so on and just lean a bit too far forward. So,
what would have been like a kid's daily, day-to-day life back 100 years ago?
I suppose you'd start up, you'd wake up and hope there was something for breakfast, but there mightn't be. You might have to go to the Farthing Breakfast Club. But you might be required to do some chores before school, so you might deliver newspapers, or that the chap who delivered the coal, or one of the girls who lived at the bottom of Preston Street had to make homemade boiled sweets for her mother to sell before she went to school. So there's quite a lot of children being part of the family economy by earning their piece. But then, of course, in term time, there were schools, so the big schools, the infant school is actually still there in the West Quarter, in the bottom of Preston Street. But the central school, which was the next one up, has gone. And then when you came home, and maybe your parents would both be out at work, and you'd sit on the doorstep waiting for your mum to come back and hoping that she'd managed to get some stale cakes from the bakers. And then there'd be the evening. And one of the things I don't really like about the West Quarter is the rats. There were rats, and there's quite a two or three stories on the Exeter Memories, people who remember lying in bed and hearing the rats, or there's a hole and the rat might come out of it, or when there was a fire somewhere else, all the rats would run away from it. So yes, you might have to go to bed, and you might have to share your bed two up, two down, as it were, so two people sleeping with their heads at the head and two people sleeping with their heads at the bottom. And probably a lot of noise around outside, particularly on a Saturday night. So I've moved from school into weekend. But so that sort of night. And it would be different in the holidays, because you'd roam around a bit more, I think. We've got accounts of how people would go out to Exwick Fields to play, which seems quite a long way to me from the West Quarter. But they roamed away and didn't worry too much about coming home until the end of the day. In fact, we've got a lovely story about a boy whose mother gave him a half crown and a basket and told him to go and get her a bottle of beer. And he went out the house and met a mate from two doors up, and they decided they were going to spend the half crown. And so they went to the cinema, and then they went out along the canal path, and then they had something to eat, and then they slept out because it was too late to go home. So, there was quite a bit of unsupervision in the life of children in the 1920s.
Thank you for coming here.
A pleasure.
And teaching us a lot about Exeter's history.
Thank you. It's really fascinating.
I've enjoyed meeting you all, and I hope it's made you think about going and walking around there with new eyes.